Ukefi Ashir Asher Kavashis Yisro, and in accordance to the measure that he conquered his nature, Vita Avosov and his desires, Vinisrachek Minarchikimoso, and that he distanced himself from those things that distance him, Me'atov, that distance him from the good, Vinishtadil Davikbo, and he attempted to cling to Hashem, Kenyasi Gehu, so will he acquire them, Vyismachbo, and will be happy with that. When I was a young man in yeshiva, the Yeshiva Zatzal used to talk about Musa Chaburas. What's a Musa Chabura? A Musa Chabura is a group of young men, like-minded people, who gather together for the sole purpose of discussing, bringing chazals, bringing Musa concepts, and figuring out strategies and techniques to apply them to our lives. In any case, at a certain point in Beis Medrash, I was invited to join a group. This was a very prestigious group. These were all very serious young men. And each week we would meet, and each week someone else would present a concept. One fellow would bring in a concept from the Gemara, another person would bring in a Rashi and Chumash. Each time they'd bring in a Musa concept, then we'd discuss how to apply it, what to do with it, etc. In any case, it was my time to present, and I didn't bring a Gemara, I didn't bring a Chumash. I showed up to the group carrying a picture sports book. Now, these were pretty serious fellows. And when I came into the room carrying a picture sports book, the looks on their faces got a little, what's the deal? Then I took this picture sports book and I put it down on the table and I opened it to the center fold of it. And those looks got pretty dirty, as in, Schaefer, what's the point? And I said, gentlemen, what do you see? And right there in the picture was Muhammad Ali, both hands up in the air, holding the heavyweight championship belt. And I said, gentlemen, what do you see? And they said, all right, Schaefer, what do you want? Frazier was the world champion. Ali just won the fight. He's heavyweight champion. What's your point? And I said, that's what you see. You see, what you see in this picture is glory, victory. What you don't see is that Muhammad Ali was driven from this fight directly to the hospital. What you don't read about in the sports pages is that he spent 3 weeks in a hospital bed. The champion of the world got so beat up in that fight that he couldn't get out of a hospital bed for 21 days. But that part they don't tell you about. You see the glory, you see the victory, but you don't see the pain. You don't see the effort. You don't see the amount of work that went into it. And what I was trying to share with my friends is that you ever find a champion, if you ever find a successful individual in any endeavor in life, I'm willing to bet you that person suffered a lot of pain, went through a tremendous amount of questions and doubts, but it got knocked down and got back in the fight. And what I wanted to share with my friends was how to learn Musa from an athlete. Because you see, Muhammad Ali, when I was a boy, was one of my boyhood heroes. And Muhammad Ali was known as Pretty Boy Ali. He was the cleanest boxer, cleanest fighter in maybe history. He was the one guy who had no scars. And you could watch the fights. He would duck, he would move. The punch would come and he just wasn't there. He was known as float like a butterfly, sting like a bee. He was the absolute perfect boxer. And Muhammad Ali estimates that in his professional career, he was hit in the head over 1 million times. That means over 1 million times a 220-pound Chaya Ra smashed him full force in the jaw. That's Pretty Boy Ali. And the cleanest fighter in boxing. But you don't read about that part. You don't read about the times he got knocked down. You don't read about the times that he got beat up. You don't read about the pain that he suffered. You see the glory, you see the victory, but you don't see the amount of work, effort, and pain that he went through. And I would like to share with you that if you would like to learn Musar, athletes are a very good place to start. Because Muhammad Ali said this line. He said, I hated every minute of training. I hated every minute of training, but I said to myself, better to suffer now and be a champion for the rest of my life. Would you like to know how much he hated training? Any excuse not to train, he would find it. He would put his running shoes under his bed at night. Why? Because he knew if he got up in the morning and his running shoes weren't there, he'd find an excuse not to run. So before he went to sleep at night, he put his running shoes under his bed because he didn't enjoy training. But he understood that this was the price you have to pay. And he once, in an interview, let out something that I consider a great insider secret. He said, when you see a fighter knocked out, right? The referee counts to 10 and the fighter doesn't get up for the count. You assume a fighter must be knocked unconscious. Muhammad Ali said it almost never happens. A professional prize fighter is in such top condition. He's so trained that it's almost impossible to knock him unconscious. When you see a guy who's down for the count and doesn't come up, it means he lost the courage. He lost the guts. He got beat up in a fight and no longer has the heart it takes because it's almost impossible to knock him unconscious. What you're looking at a man who is a man who's beat. And what Muhammad Ali shared with the world is this concept that you have to be willing to pay the price. But the price is getting hit in the head, the price is getting knocked down, and the price is getting back up off the canvas. And the mark of the man isn't how smooth he moves, isn't how good his hook is. It's how many times he's able to get back up, get back in the ring, and fight again. And my friends, this concept applies to every endeavor in life, whether it's business, whether it's academics, and certainly whether it's learning, anything that a human being excels at, anything that a human being ever reached great heights in, I guarantee you if you find a successful person, you'll find a person who got hit, got knocked down, got back in the fight, got back in the fight again and again and again, because there is nothing in life that's great that comes easy. And I remember the Rishiva Zatzal used to have an interesting question. Before sending a man out into the field, whether to be a rov in a shul, whether to be a Rosh Hashiva, whether to be a teacher, the Rosh Hashiva would always ask this question, is he a fighter? Is he a fighter? Now, I remember as a young man asking myself, why is the Rosh Hashiva asking that question? The obvious question is he a mensch? Is he a Talmud Chacham? Is he a Baal Midos? Is he a leader of men? Why are you asking, is he a fighter? The Rosh Hashiva Zatzal explained to us why he asked that question. You see, no matter what happens, there are going to be many issues, many obstacles, and I don't care how much talent you have. I don't care how much natural ability you have. If you're not able to get knocked down and get back in the fight, you will not succeed. Because you're going to go out there, start a yeshiva, start a shul, start a new program, whatever it may be, and what's invariably going to happen is you're going to have some successes and some failures. And if you're not able to deal with the failure, take that punch and get back in the fight, you'll never succeed. What Muhammad Ali was saying, and this is what I was trying to tell my friends that day, was getting hit a million times in the head. A million times in the head is not glorious. It's not beautiful. No one walks back from the gym and says, wow, I just love that hook I got hit with tonight. But that's the price you have to pay if you want to succeed at life. And unfortunately, it's a lesson that's oftentimes not taught. Oh, everyone wants to be that champion, whether it's sports, whether it's business. Oh, I want to make $1 million, I want to make $10 million. Or even if it's learning, I want to be a huge Talmud Chacham. Oh, I really want to succeed. And I'd like to share with you, for every huge gadol that you find who is a brilliant genius, I'll find you an equal amount who came from average stock. If you study the gadolim throughout history, half of them were natural born geniuses and half of them were regular plain individuals. You had your Rav Moshe Feinsteins, brilliant at a very young age. But if you read the stories about the Chassam Sofer, that wasn't who he was. And if you read the stories, what you'll see is the one thing they all had in common was they had ups and downs, and there were many, many questions in between. As a matter of fact, Rav Huttner writes in one of his Igeris, in one of his letters, that they make a mistake about Gedolim. People assumed, a gadol. He woke up at 3 years old and he was mastering all of Chumash. By five, he finished Mishnayos. By seven or eight, it was Bavli. By 10, it was Yerushalmi. And the rest of his life, all he did was Chazir, going on and on, level after level. If you read the stories that way, you're not paying attention to what really happened. Says Rav Huttner, any person who ever reached greatness got knocked down and had to get back into that fight. Had many questions, had many doubts, had many times when he didn't think he could make it, had different situations, because the man who was born for greatness and only excelled level after level has not been born yet, because there's no reason to create such a human being. Such a Bria is a Malach. Such a Bria has no purpose in our world. Our world is about the fight, our world is about the battle, our world is about the marshaling the energy and getting back in that fight time after time after time, getting knocked down and getting up off of that canvas and getting back into the fight. And this is a life lesson. It's not only in ruchnius, it's not only in spirituality, not only in learning, it's a life lesson for success in any endeavor. Find me a successful human being. Read a biography of any human being who reached greatness. I guarantee there were many failures. If it's in business, it might be Milton Hershey, who went bankrupt twice before he started his company. If you'll find me an individual who reached any level of greatness, if you'll find me a Thomas Edison, you'll also find the fact that he tried more than once to discover what the right element was. I've read it, and it seems to me an accurate fact, that when he was searching for that filament, he understood the concept of electricity very well, and he wanted to come out with this thing called the electric light bulb, to use electricity to provide light. It was unheard of and unknown. But here was the problem. Electricity burns, and the burning of the element is what creates the light. But every type of substance that Thomas Edison tried failed. It would burn out in a short while, whether it be an hour, whether it be a week, but there was not an element he could find that remained for any length of time. Finally, he came up with a hop of a vacuum, pull out the air so it can't ignite into a flame, and he tried element after element after element. In the end, it's estimated that until he discovered tungsten, he tried 10,000 different elements. 10,000 failures. 10,000 times he went back to the drawing board again and again and again. But we're not talking about days. We're talking about weeks. We're talking about months. We're talking about sleeping under his desk for literally days on end, trying this and trying that and trying this again and again and again and again and again. But you don't read about all the failures. You only read about the success. You only read about the glory. But the failure is part of the success. I'd like to share with you a quote. First, I'll tell you the quote, then I'll tell you who said it. And the quote goes as follows. Success consists of going from failure to failure without a loss of enthusiasm. Let me say it again. Success consists of going from failure to failure without a loss of enthusiasm. Okay, who said it? Well, I'll tell you. The individual who said that was a college professor. Man was a historian, a philosopher. Oh, he also won the Nobel Prize for Literature. He was also a world statesman, knighted by the Queen of England, and he was also the Prime Minister of England. The man was Sir Winston Churchill, arguably one of the most successful individuals in the 20th century. But I'd like to share with you that that phrase actually well defined Winston Churchill's life. You see, historians give credit to Winston Churchill for saving the free world. In 1933, when Adolf Hitler came to power, Chamberlain was the prime minister. There was one sane voice in parliament. Winston Churchill was the lion that roared. From the parliament floor, he screamed out, "Hitler is a menace to society, a menace to humanity." But no one else listened. And Chamberlain's policy was appeasement. And historians credit Winston Churchill with being that one lone voice. If it weren't for his leadership, for his blood and guts, then they say Nazism would have ruled over democracy and the world we live in would be vastly different. Interestingly enough, Germany surrendered in May of 1945. July of 1945, Winston Churchill found himself voted out of office. A great wartime prime minister. This is peacetime, we have to rebuild, and voters didn't have the confidence in him. Winston Churchill, saving the free world, bringing England to its finest hour, found himself out of a job, unemployed. He then went on to write a sixth treatise work that won him the Nobel Prize, went on to fight communism, but his life was going from failure to failure without a loss of enthusiasm. That is the definition, and that is the requirement for success. And this concept is absolutely essential for succeeding in any endeavor, and even more so for succeeding in life. Now, I want you to imagine with me the following. Imagine you're a fly on the wall in a psychiatrist's office, and in walks a man, and the psychiatrist says, "So tell me about your life." "Well, doc, My life is a battle. I mean, all day long, I have two voices in my head. One says this and one says that. One says do this and one says that. And all day long, I'm fighting and fighting. I'm fighting back and forth and fighting and fighting. All day long, it's a fever pitch battle. You'd imagine that the doctor would have him committed, or at least put him on major psychoactive drugs, because clearly the guy's got a problem. But Chazal tell us that is an apt definition of life. It's a melchama chazaka, a battle. The Mesil Sharm defines it as a raging war. The war is on every side, whether it's wealth, whether it's poverty, whether it's health, whether it's disease. Every situation handcrafted, hand-designed to be the battlefield of life. And the human being is that soldier in the middle, always tempted, always pulled, always this way and that way and this way, and every situation handcrafted to be the ultimate Nisayan. And I'd like to explain to you a great secret of life. You ever noticed that if it's not one thing, it's another? Just when everything was smooth, just when things were working out, then that happened. And I finally got rid of that problem, and then this one surfaces. It's unbelievable. Every time I get life really worked out, something else surfaces, something else comes about, and it's unbelievable. It almost seems orchestrated. It almost seems like someone's like pulling the strings over here. Well, I'd like to share with you the great secret of life. Someone is pulling the strings. It is orchestrated. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running your life. Hashem is creating for you situations to test you, to challenge you. And the reason why it almost seems so strange, just when you mastered one situation, a whole new set of circumstances appears, because that's why you're here. That's what life is about. Would you like a mushal? Mushal Mahadava Dome? It's been a little while for me, but in the good old days of video games, you would see the game would start and up would come the opponent. And he was big and strong, and you pulled the levers and moved. And if you were very successful, you beat him. You beat your enemy. But then up would come a new enemy. But this one was bigger and stronger and faster. So you pulled the levers, you did whatever you're supposed to do, and you beat him. And no matter how strong that guy was, the next guy was stronger or faster or had better weapons. And life is a video game. Hashem orchestrates the situations perfectly. The perfect test for you now. And once you win this test, and once you win this battle, the new situation, the new opponent is bigger and stronger and faster and coming at you from a totally different angle, one you never thought of before. And it's not by accident, not by happenstance, and not because Hashem isn't trying, quite the opposite. Hashem is very, very carefully, very craftily designing these situations to give you the golden opportunity of life to grow, to accomplish, to really reach stellar heights. But you have to wake up. You have to wake up and see someone's pulling the puppet strings. Someone's really running the show. It's not just one of those strange things. Oh, look at that. Life is so strange. It's a very carefully orchestrated plan. And this is one of the great secrets to understanding life, to understanding that Hashem orchestrates every situation, that Hashem brings all different types of events, because each is a test. And what the Mesillas Yesharim is sharing with us is wealth is a great test. Poverty is a great test. Health is a great test. Illness is a great test. And the minute you say the words, oh, if only I could have his life or her life, it would be so much easier. That's the moment when you say the words, I don't understand life itself. I don't understand why Hashem put me here. I don't understand my capacity. I don't understand why Hashem gave me this. And the reason why you have those questions is because fundamentally you don't understand life. When you look at someone else's life and you say, oh, if only, what you're really saying is I'm clueless. I don't understand what's happening in his life. I don't understand his nishonos. And I don't understand why Hashem is giving him that test and me this one. But if you step away from the fray and you step above and look down upon it, you quickly recognize Hashem carefully orchestrates the ideal stage setting for you. And I'd like to share with you two life tests, two very, very different life tests, but just emblematic, maybe illustrative of life tests in general. One is not so pretty. I was a bocher in yeshiva, and there was a fellow who was having trouble, And I sort of befriended him, and I was trying to help him, trying to give him chizik. And at a certain point, Rabbi Harris, who was the reshiva then, now the reshiva of Forest Hills, wanted to throw this young man out of yeshiva. But not only did he want to throw him out, he was aghast. How could it be? You see, this young man would learn morning Seder, would learn afternoon Seder, and then went to a Beis Hazonos at night, to a house of ill repute. And Rabbi Harris's attitude was, how's it shayach? How could you learn? Because the fellow really was learning. He really learned morning Seder, and he really learned the afternoon Seder. How's it possible? And I explained to Rabbi Harris how it was possible. You see, unfortunately, this young man grew up out of town, and he was in a day school, and he had an English teacher who wasn't Jewish, a young woman, and this young woman abused him when he was in 7th or 8th grade. And for his life, he had the shonas that are hard to imagine. Images kept coming back to him, desires and things that were going on. And he would sit down to a Gemara in the morning, and he'd sit down and go, let's go, I'm going to succeed. And he'd concentrate and work, and his images would come in his brain, and he'd force them out. Come on, let's go, I'm going to learn. And his images would come back, get out of here. And his images would come back, and back and forth, and back and forth. And it was a battle royale, a huge bitter battle. While everyone else was concentrating and learning, asking questions, he was battling back and forth and back and forth, finding this, oh, you go to shiur and some get some points, lose some points, and in afternoon Seder would begin battle number two. And he'd start learning with his chavrusa, and then his thoughts would come in his brain, and he'd come back to the tosis, and his thoughts would come back and forth and back and forth. And by 6:30 at night, he was exhausted. He was weary from a day of battle, and he was so fed up, and it was so difficult that he went and did what he did. And I'm not here to excuse it, and I wasn't telling Rabbi Harris in any sense that it was right, but understanding the circumstances is critical and important. And Rabbi Harris was moda. I hear. That's a life test. And that's a test that no one wishes upon anyone, and no one has a right to say, oh, if I were there, I'd be all different. I don't know about that. I sure don't know about that at all. But I want to share with you a different life test. It's a little bit easier to hear. It's a little personal, and I hope I'll be forgiven for it. But when I was a Rebbe in Yeshiva, Yaakov Shweki was a young man learning Beis Medrash. And he was a fine fellow learning three Siddurim a day. And at a certain point, he called me up with the following question. His mother was very concerned about his future. She liked the idea that he was learning. He wanted him very much to succeed in learning. But Parnassus was a serious issue, and she wanted him to begin taking college courses to go into social work. And to do that, he needed to take college courses and take off maybe night Seder twice a week, whatever it may be, to begin his college preparation. So he asked me to Shiloh, what should he do? So I said to him as follows, listen, Yaakov, you and I both don't know whether this music thing could ever succeed. Who's to say? But maybe it will. Hard to really know. But here's what I think you should do. Right now, you don't have a problem. What I think you should do is you get married. After you get married, you'll try it. You'll see. If you're able to make a parnasa at this music thing, then great, fine. If not, you could always then go and pursue social work. But right now, you might as well learn. And if you have to go to school after, you'll do it after, fine. Kachava, that's what happened. Now, I don't know if you follow Jewish music careers, but when Yaakov Shweki got married and began his music career, Baruch Hashem, I think he could earn a living. But I'd like to share with you what earning a living means. And I don't mean the amount of money. Superstardom. When I say like a meteor rising, it is difficult for me to explain the cover that Yaakov Shweki receives on a daily basis. But I'll give you an illustration. I was at a chasana, and Rav Pinchas Scheinberg Zatzal was at the chasana, one of the Gedolei Hador. All eyes were on Rav Scheinberg. The Talmid Chacham, the huge individual, all focus was on that man. And in walked Yaakov Shweki, and it was like a spotlight moving from Rav Scheinberg to Yaakov Shweki. The man is given more honor, more cover than kings. In our little world, he's given honor that's hard to believe. And he can't walk into a pizza shop, can't walk into a restaurant without, Yaakov Shweki, are you Yaakov Shweki? And I'd like to share with you, while everyone says, wow, if only I could have that life, it's not such a simple life. You see, Yaakov Shweki, Baruch Hashem, and I know him personally, is a real Balmidos and works on himself. But if it were you or I in that situation, the gaiva, the arrogance would be unbelievable. My name, my reputation. But that's a life test that Baruch Hashem is succeeding at beautifully, but it's a life test that fits him. Poverty or wealth, health or sickness, What the Mesillas Yesharim is describing to us is the fact that Hashem custom designs, handcrafts the perfect lifestyle. But it's not just the perfect life, the perfect challenge, the demands, the unbelievable tests. Sometimes it just goes and goes, and then bingo, a new opponent shows up, one you never saw before, one you never thought about, and you are now welcome to the test called life. And understanding that that's the purpose of life, understanding that Hashem handcrafts them, understanding that Hashem orchestrates each of these for our betterment, for our good, is key and essential to understand life. But you have to understand how to fight. I once had a conversation with a drug counselor. This was a fellow who was very, very well known, in fact, famous for his helping serious drug addicts. And he told me an interesting line. He said, "I don't allow any of my patients to go to Manhattan." Now, I assumed must be there's too much drugs there, prevalent paraphernalia, whatever it may be. So that was the reason. And then he explained, no, that's not why. "I don't let my patients go to Manhattan because the Empire State Building is there." Empire State Building? Yeah, don't you understand? See, the Empire State Building has that needle on top. It looks like a hypodermic needle. And for many of my patients, that's a trigger. And I said to myself, oh my goodness. If you're a heroin addict and you're used to putting a hypodermic needle in your arm, seeing the Empire State Building is a trigger. Now, believe me, it doesn't affect me. And I could have passed the Empire State Building for the next 100 years and never once had that. But that's an assignment to that person. And understanding that each individual is given a very handcrafted test, very, very carefully orchestrated. Now, in that case, that's a trigger that that person created in their own world. They made themselves addicted to drugs, because no baby, unless they come from very bad families, wakes up addicted to drugs. But there's a whole other package of things that happen, a whole other series of things, of people and places and friends and situations that lead them down paths. And understanding that Hashem orchestrates these various situations, and understanding that my job is to fight the fight, is the basic understanding of life. And I want to share with you what I consider one of the great secrets of life. If you don't find yourself failing in at least one area of life, I believe you're not living. If you're not finding yourself failing in at least one area in life, then you're not trying, you're not setting goals, you're not really growing. Because if you were really setting goals, if you really understood life, I guarantee you would be failing in at least one area. Whether it be your midos, whether it be your anger or your jealousy, whether it be your temper, whether it be your stinginess, whether it be your learning, whether it be your family situation, whether it be your brother, your sister, your mother, or someone else that you're not getting along with. If you're not failing in at least one area, you're really not trying, you're really not succeeding at this thing called life. But understanding that Hashem meets out very exact life situations. Some people have difficult marriages. Oftentimes, it's their fault, but not always. Unfortunately, I don't know if unfortunately, but I get a chance to speak to a lot of people. Most marriage problems that I deal with, both parties are to blame. But that's not always the case. There are situations when one party is really, really the problem. And I understand that person has the problem, but why does the other one have to suffer with it? And understanding that Hashem handcrafted that situation, that zivug was made before they were both born. Some situations from a distance look wonderful, some people's situations don't look so wonderful. But my Rebbe Zatzal, I remember, was Yom Kippur, and he gave the famous mushel, but hearing it from my Rebbe was more powerful. He said, it's an old mushel. If everyone's pekel, every Jew has a pekel, everyone has a load. If you were to take your load off and put it in the middle, if all the Jews would line up on this wall and that wall, and you take off your heavy load and put it in the middle, and you'd see those packages, those heavy pekels in the middle, each person would run for their own pekel. They'd run for their own load, because Hashem handcrafts the situation based on my temperament, based on my abilities, based on my life. Hashem handcrafts the various events and circumstances to fit me like a hand in glove. But understanding that is the first perspective. The next perspective is understanding my role. My role is the warrior. My role is the fighter. My role is to get up and get knocked down and get back up again and get knocked down and get back up again and understand that that is life. Understanding that a prize fighter, understanding that a world champion is not the guy who never gets hit. He's the guy who gets hit a million times in the head. But he's the guy who gets knocked down and gets back in the fight. He's the guy who wins the fight and then is driven to the hospital. But he's the champion, the world champion, because he's got the guts, he's got the courage. You can't knock him out. And by the way, Frazier's daughter said about that fight, her father hit him with everything he had. He kept coming. He kept coming. He hit Ali with everything he had, but the guys kept coming at him. And that's a fighter. That's a champion. Understanding that life is a battle is the first point you have to understand. But then understanding my role. My role is a fighter. My role is to get back in the fight. My role is to get knocked down and get back in. And whether that fight is my midos, whether that fight is my life situation, whether that fight is learning, whether that fight is understanding, it's an issue of getting knocked down and getting back into the fight. That's a key to success in any endeavor in life. And that is the key to success in life itself.